Student numbers are down this fall on the Kansas State University campus. Despite that, campus leaders are infusing more money in a couple of arenas to not only retain current students, but also make their time at the university a better learning experience. The effort comes in what University President Kirk Schultz calls themes, themes that relate to the university's 2025 plan, an effort to become a top national university by the year 2025. One of those themes, titled the Undergraduate Educational Experience, was allocated just over $1.3 million.
Largely what that talks about is advising, student scholarships, retention efforts, things like that, that are directly impactful on undergraduate students.
And graduate experience.
That's also theme three in the 2025 plan. And so one of the things that generally we try and do when we talk about how we're going to spend new money coming in is relate it back to our strategic plan. Otherwise, I just make a whole list of here's all the stuff that we're going to do. And it's very easy to somebody say, well, those may be fine things, but what does that have to do with the plan that the university talks about all the time and put together and things like that? So really, it's an attempt to make sure that as faculty and staff and external people see that, that we tie it directly into the things that our faculty and staff helped us plan 5 years ago.
Well, we're on the subject of students. Do we have an official count for the semester yet?
Our official count, I think, is out either this afternoon or Monday. I don't remember which one. It's an artificial construct, this 20th day number. And I'm convinced that when the university was founded in 1863, somebody probably figured out they had to wait 20 days to see who was here. But the bottom line is we're down in headcount and down in overall enrollment for the first time in about 10 years. And interestingly, our incoming freshman class this year is the most diverse class we've ever had. We actually have more students of diverse backgrounds. We define that basically by ethnicity. So we've got more Latino students than we've ever had in our history. It's also the best academically prepared freshman class that we've ever had, measured by ACT. So each year that continues to go up. And our freshman to sophomore retention ratio is also tracked as we've attracted these better classes in, also has tended to increase. So overall headcount is down, but the headcount is down in several areas. It's down in Chinese students because of the yuan and the Chinese economy. We had less Chinese students to elect to enroll. We had fewer students take distance education classes. We had fewer graduate students at the master's level, interestingly, not at the PhD level, that enrolled. So we had across the board in all these different areas, we just had fewer students enroll this time, at a time when we actually capped tuition and had probably our lowest increase that we've had in several years. So it's a little counterintuitive.
So when we talk about fewer students, are we talking 50? Are we talking about 400? 800? What are we talking about? 400?
400, 450, somewhere in that kind of a number when it comes out. So, and if you look at it, just that is about, we have roughly under 25,000 students. So, you know, we're talking a couple percentage points down.
Does that have any kind of a negative impact on money coming into the school or the way we handle classes?
Absolutely. What it means is that, you know, we generate less tuition revenue. And so we've got to find some ways to counteract that. And so we're going to use some one-time monies to fill in the gaps so that we don't come back out to the colleges and say, well, gee, our enrollment's down. And so, you know, you owe us a certain amount of money to help compensate for that. So, you know, we're running out of those kind of sources. But at the same time, we're working really hard not to go back and further tax, if you will, our faculty and staff who are normally in most departments need more faculty as it is and don't have enough resources to do the things they need to do. We're trying to be really mindful of that as we see this enrollment drop.
In your State of the University address, you also talked about facilities mm-hmm. and infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Give me some idea what you talked about.
So facilities and infrastructure really refer to our academic buildings and also existing structures on campus. And so, for example, the old Memorial Stadium, we don't use it for athletic purposes anymore. There was the art department had some classroom space under there. The Purple Mask Theater was there. So what we've gone through is been able to raise some money, gone in and renovate and really take an old, frankly, fairly dilapidated structure and turn it into modern space that is very much more useful. So if you look on the east side, the old Memorial Stadium, now we've got a state-of-the-art black box theater for our School of Music, Theater, and Dance to use for various plays and different kinds of things like that. So on the opposite side, that's going to be career planning and placement. The key thing there is that we took something that we did not get any money from the state to renovate. It's stuck in the middle of campus. It's useful if you can repurpose it. So we're able to do that. The other thing is people see on campus, we had to spend about $65 million on a chiller plant. Not a very sexy project, but that's all this 36-inch pipe or 24-inch pipe that's being buried on campus is basically to provide more effective and efficient air conditioning and cooling for a lot of the academic infrastructure on campus. So when we talk about infrastructure, largely we're talking about physical infrastructure, electricity, heating, cooling, ventilation systems, roofs, things like that.
You used the word dilapidated.
Yep.
At one time, the university was way behind in taking care of buildings. Where do we stand with that now?
Yeah, and the numbers, they throw lots of numbers around. I've seen numbers as high as $800 million in that should be allocated to renovate and do some things. What we've done is we've actually shrunk that number over the last couple of years. And the reason for that is we're actually fixing up some of these older buildings. We're spending some time, even if we don't gut the entire building, what you wind up doing is renovating a classroom and making it more modern. And while we're doing that, we change electricity and we put new roofs on and new windows in buildings. So we've shrunk that a little bit. We get some money from the state to do that, about $10 million a year. But then we've supplemented that with private monies that we've been able to raise to do some of this renovation work.
With regard to money, one of the things that's been in the news here of late is money with strings attached. How does Kansas State handle something like that?
And I'm particularly sensitive to this because I don't want to put the university, our faculty or staff or students in any position that any dollars that come in from a private source, from a corporation, a foundation, anything, has these artificial strings attached about, well, here's what the results need to be, or we want to support you, but only if you're going to do something a particular way. Now, every grant money that comes in for doing research has strings attached. From the National Science Foundation, you've got to have certain reporting requirements. That's okay. I don't want people thinking, well, is it just mean it's a free-for-all? But what we can't do is we cannot accept things that are going to put us in jeopardy of people outside saying that research was already strongly influenced because whoever provided the money certainly had a result in mind. I view that as we've got to protect our faculty and staff. So, we want people to understand what kind of work we're doing, why it's important, who's funding it. You see a lot of things out there, too, that people talk about, Professor X is doing work in this particular area. I wonder who's funding them about climate change. And sometimes you go back and find out who's funding it and you say, well, gee, I think I know why the results are coming that way. We've got to be transparent so people acknowledge the work our faculty and staff are doing and not see it as a funding source is pushing somebody in a particular direction.
Is there going to be a problem when we're dealing with new facilities, and I'm thinking of out here on the hill dealing with infectious diseases mm-hmm. and problems like that, that some of that is being worked, is work that's coming from the government? Are we going to run into problems there on maybe secrecy or what we can release or can't release?
I think the answer to that is yes in some regards, because it's a government facility. And there are certain things that folks will be studying that we don't want to run a banner on the outside of the building saying, here's what's being studied here. Now, I think the American public probably, when we were growing up, had a different view sometimes of government-sponsored research and the need for secrecy. Where we've got to balance that out is there needs to be some expectation of being transparent and upfront about the types of things that we're trying to address. So I think one of the challenges and unique opportunities we have as a university working with NBAF is how are we going to communicate to the general public at large the types of things that we're working on without compromising things, but acknowledging what it is that we're trying to do. That's a fine balance, but I think we can't simply say, you know what, we can't tell you anything. I think those days are behind us. So we've got 4 or 5 years to work to figure this out while they're building the facility, and it's going to require communication professionals, scientists, engineers, public policy people, all working together to kind of acknowledge that the time we live in is a little bit different than before. And as a quick example, many people out there may have seen the USA Today set of articles about, you know, biolabs in your backyard and things like this. Interestingly, a lot of universities that they cited in there said, we're not going to talk about this at all. We decided at K-State that we were better off being willing to talk to them about it so that at least we could maybe provide a balanced perspective on things. I think that's the kind of leadership we're going to have to take with NBAF as well.
There's a lot of money with NBAF. Is there a chance you could get overruled?
I want to remind everybody, this is not a Kansas State University facility. We will not manage it. We don't own it. It is a federal laboratory. So what we have to do is we have to work to influence that. But at the end of the day, Department of Homeland Security and the Department of Agriculture are the ones that are running, operating, building that particular facility. I think we have certain things that we're going to put down that we think need to be in place for it to be a model facility. And Richard, that's where I think we're going to really spend our time. Let's figure it out before there's an issue. That's the time to kind of figure it out, not when there's an issue and you've got all kinds of people worrying about what's there and secrecy, and then the feds throwing up this blanket saying, we're not going to talk about anything. That's not the situation we want to be in. If we figure this out well ahead of time, doesn't mean that'll never happen, but we can avoid it. And that's really where I think we got to spend our time.
How much involvement is the university going to have there?
I hope a lot. I think we can attract some faculty and graduate students that are going to come to Manhattan, Kansas, because they have an opportunity to work in a truly world-class facility, not in a lot of other places. I think it's incumbent upon us to work together with the feds to find a way to make sure our faculty and staff who have the training and background to work there can work on collaborative research projects that can be published and things like this. If we get to the end, and there's a $1.25 billion federal facility built right next to campus, and we don't have that interaction, I think it's going to be a failure.
We talked a little bit about this last time. We're headed back in to another legislative session in a few months. What kind of preparations, what kind of hope do you have for that legislative session?
I think it's going to be one of our toughest legislative sessions in my 7 years in Kansas. I think, we barely got through the revenue packages last time at a historic session in terms of length and probably just sort of the way, the demeanor of our legislative colleagues. I just don't see a way that they're going to be able to pass any additional revenue kind of stuff in this session. And if that's the case, and state revenues continue to decline, I think they're going to fit the state budget in a smaller box, and that could be tough for education, higher education, the state government, and everything. So I think we're going to have another one of these sessions where we're going to work to preserve what's there. Now, the governor has said and continues to commit to keeping flat funding for higher education, so we're going to work hard to hold him in his word and hold legislative leadership at their word that says that's what they're going to do.
That's the president of Kansas State University, Dr. Kirk Schultz. I'm Richard Baker, and this is the K-State Radio Network.